And so to the top spot, and can it be any surprise at all to know that my favourite film of 2020, the film that caught me most off guard in 2020, the film that impressed me the most in 2020, is of course Rose Glass's brilliant Saint Maud. I walked out of the film and I just said, bloody hell.
That's British film critic Mark Kermode offering high praise for Rose Glass's debut feature film, Saint Maud. Rose, who wrote and directed the film, was only 29 when Saint Maud premiered at the Toronto International Film Festival in 2019. Saint Maud is an intense, riveting horror film that focuses on a pious nurse named Maud, who is a caregiver for an American dancer and choreographer named Amanda. Maud believes that God speaks to her directly and that their special relationship can help save Amanda's soul. The film is now available for American audiences, so we decided to catch up with Rose to talk about her debut and how she came up with the thrilling idea behind it.
I sort of started coming up with an early version of the idea just as I was finishing film school in 2014. And I was interested in the idea of doing a two-hander between a woman and a voice in her head. And then the story sort of developed very gradually and slowly from there.
You had to make the narrative of the film work on two levels, the real-world story and Maud's inner story. How did you find the right balance for these two levels?
I guess it was just an ongoing sort of balancing act. And it wasn't too hard because I knew that, yes, there sort of needed to be a kind of literal, for me anyway, it was helpful to have a sort of literal real life logic to everything that she does. But the sort of the lens that we see everything through is obviously through Maud's perspective. And in her mind, it's very unambiguous what's going on. And she is in communication with God and she's on this mission and that's what's happening. So it sort of was following through her, but trying to keep half an eye on what I thought was really happening, quotation marks.
When you pray, do you get a response?
Sometimes he talks.
You hear his voice?
Most of the time it's just like he's physically in me or around me. It's how he guides me.
Maud's relationship with God is even more intense in the sense that it takes on this kind of physical sensation. Why did you think it was important to include this?
I don't know. I guess I was trying to just think of a fairly universal way in which she connects with God that would be kind of accessible to even sort of secular audiences. I didn't want it to just be this sort of lofty academic thing that we just take it at her word that she's talking to God. I don't know. And she goes to such weird and extreme lengths for the love of this God that I felt the audience needed to get a sense, you know, she needs to be getting something exciting out of it and outside of the ordinaries. The point of the film for me was never in any way to kind of be sort of Christian bashing or kind of, because I think there's plenty of that goes on anyway. And I, you know, obviously I have my sort of cynicisms and deep suspicions of a lot of things to do with organized religion. But for me, the whole film's far more about, it's a far more emotional, psychological film than it is, or spiritual, I guess, as well, but all on a much more sort of intimate, personal sort of nature.
Can you walk us through the process of how you developed the character of Maud?
I guess it's sort of working backwards from the bits of the story that you do know. So I knew in the beginning that the initial hook I was interested in is, you know, young woman with this relationship with the voice inside her head, and then it was going to be this sort of kinky love affair that she was going to have with God, which seemed fun. But then then you sort of take a step back and go, okay, well, if this is the main relationship that's going on in her life and no one else knows much about it, that tells you quite a lot about her already. So it's sort of a question of like the character feeding into the plot, and then when you're stuck with the plot, you look at the character, and it's a sort of back and forth thing.
Forgive me my impatience, but I hope you will reveal your plan for me soon. I can't shake the feeling that you must have saved me for something greater than this. Not that I'm complaining or anything. Amen.
And then obviously casting, you know, more of it's Maud, I would love to say, oh yes, that's exactly how I wrote it, this is great, but it's, you know, she took what I was hoping the character would be and then just made it so much more, just made her something much more complex, I think. And she's just a phenomenal actor, and her range is insane. And she's also just, and it was great because she's just very laid back and fun to work with and super switched on, and made my job a lot easier because both her and Jennifer get things really quickly. We didn't have much rehearsal time, but they'd, you know, we talked about it, they knew what was going on, so they, most takes, they'd get what I wanted pretty quickly, and then we'd usually have a bit of time to sort of try out variations of things. So it was all quite organic, I guess. And then even through the shoot, you know, things about the character keep changing and adding, and great gradual process.
So speaking of Morthy's versatility, there's this shot late in the film where she looks very much like common depictions of Jesus. Was that intentional?
Yes. Yeah. Jaquetta Levon, our makeup artist, all around the sort of makeup area that she was in, we just had pictures stuck up of loads of printouts of sort of old religious paintings of all these very sort of more Mary Magdalene and Virgin Mary sort of holy ladies with that slightly pink flushed cheek but perfect sort of marbly skin. And she does look a little Jesus-like as well. Yeah, we wanted her to feel a bit like a painting and for the film to feel quite painterly. So the combination of Jaquetta being great and Ben Fordsman, our DOP. Although he did say actually at one point, he is phenomenal. Like, he likes faces beautifully. But he did say to me at one point, he was like, God, Morvish just got one of those faces that looks amazing in every kind of light. And I was like, yeah, so great. Yeah. I've been like standing in for her at one point because we're about the same height. So a lot of the time when she was getting her hair and makeup done, I'd sort of be standing in. We were doing a big close up and I was there and he was like, oh, I don't know, something's not right. And then Morvith came in and we swapped places and he was like, oh, that's better.
Jennifer Ely is excellent as Amanda. She's the soul that Maud is trying to save. And Jennifer's performance is very nuanced and it's difficult to get an accurate read on what's going on in her mind, especially about what she thinks of religion. Can you talk a bit about Jennifer's performance?
I love working with Jennifer. She just made the character so much more nuanced and believable, I think, than maybe what I'd written before. Because initially I pictured her being like a lot older and English. So sort of this fabulous theatrical kind of grande. And it just all started to feel a bit sort of, I was like, oh no, she's just going to be this massive lovey. And then it's like, why is Maud obsessed with this like weird old lady? And so Carmel Cochran, our casting director, she suggested Jennifer. And at first I was like, what are you talking about? She's too young and she's American. And then as soon as I got over that and pictured her in it, it was like, ah, that's much better. Let's do that instead.
How long have you been doing this?
Just over a year.
What were you doing before?
I worked at St. Afra's Hospital.
Horrible place. Have you seen a lot of death?
Yes.
What made you leave?
And it's what God wanted. When he came, everything changed.
So this is a recent conversion.
I like the sort of playfulness. I think she's sort of flattered by Maud's attentions and is sort of intrigued because, you know, she's obviously starting to, you know, she's thinking about existence and death. She's approaching death. And so I think maybe she just Maud happens to catch her at a point when she's maybe more open to those sorts of things than she would have been before. And maybe is treating Maud a little bit more like a plaything or a distraction, which is what Maud misunderstands. And she obviously gets over ahead of herself. But yeah, Jennifer, she just manages to do so much with so little, which for a character who has all the trappings of a very kind of theatrical, over-the-top sort of character, you know, the set and the costumes sort of were doing all of that for her. Well, that's kind of what she said once in an interview, which I liked. So it allows her to do a lot less and leave you to just wonder. And I think she's really funny.
yeah, exactly. You're bang on with all those points, I think. You came up with this term to describe something that Maud experiences throughout the movie, godgasms. What are godgasms? It's a great term, great word.
So weird that was just like, I should have come up with a better name because that was just sort of what we ended up calling them when we were shooting.
What could be better, though? What would be a better name?
Well, true, yeah, it's very very, very subtle, nuanced stuff, as you can tell. But I don't know, it seemed appropriate. God is coursing through her and she appears to be having an orgasm. I mean, maybe to a lot of people who wouldn't believe in God, the idea of, oh, I'm being touched by God, God has given me a message. I think if you don't believe in God, that doesn't mean very much to you. But, you know, suddenly being struck down by an orgasm, that, you know, I think we sort of can imagine what that feels like. But for me, it wasn't purely sexual, to be honest. I mean, obviously, yes, there's definitely sexual connotations to it. But it's more going for a kind of euphoric, transcendent, hallucinogenic kind of thing. I think I told her, like, you're having a whitey, but it feels really good.
Mm. St. Maud reminded me of Roman Polanski's Repulsion in terms of the artful ways that it portrays loneliness, isolation, and mental deterioration. Was this film an influence in any way?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that's probably not hard to see. I love that film. I mean...
Yeah, me too.
I mean, not just that one. There are obviously others, but that was definitely a film which, when I saw it for the first time, I think as a teenager, had quite an impact on me. I think it's just an amazing example of what you can do with one person in a flat, I guess, as a premise. Through the tools of filmmaking, storytelling, acting, all of the stuff that we've been talking about, what can you do with what's essentially one woman having a nervous breakdown in her flat and sort of make a whole thing around that. And any films where the imagined sort of becomes real, or the world that you see doesn't conform to the same logic as the world that we live in, I enjoy that a lot.
Mm-hmm. That whole ambiguity thing, which there's lots of in St. Maud. Were there any other particular films or directors that influenced you in the way you approached making St. Maud?
Yeah. Polanski definitely, you know, typical pretentious film student, big Bergman fan. So I was banging on about Persona and Through a Glass Darkly and The Silence all the time. Probably Through a Glass Darkly particularly. That's got some quite obvious links with this film as well. And Ken Russell, so The Devils, loved that in terms of heightened euphoric ecstatic religious ecstasy and general bonkersness. The Devils is is superb. And so much fun. And loads of others I've forgotten, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite scene that you can talk about that doesn't involve any spoilers?
My favorite scene's probably, I don't know, maybe I think this might just be my favorite scene because it was a scene that I was so nervous about before we filmed it, and then it turned out fine. But there's a scene between Maud and Carol, who's Amanda's kind of girlfriend, lover, whatever, and she's Maud has sort of decided at this point, she's been given this mission by God to save Amanda, and they've been getting closer and becoming friends, and it's all lovely, and she feels the Lord moving through her. But Amanda's sees this younger woman who Maud basically doesn't like, and I think is jealous of her receiving Amanda's affections, and takes her into the kitchen and gives her a sort of talking to.
Can you hear yourself? Maud, you're her nurse.
She doesn't want you to see it, but she is vulnerable right now. And it is not right that she spends her last days getting worked up about a silly girl who doesn't care about her.
I care about her.
Not enough. What are you doing?
I'm leaving.
Oh. Okay, so you'll do it.
Anything you say, Maud.
I just think both Morvith and Lily, the actress who plays Carol, are just so good in that scene. And Morvith is hilarious. I think she is anyway. But it's just seeing her just trying so hard to... She thinks thinks that everything's going very well and she's being very reasonable. But it's like one of the first times... For me, it's good. Like, up until that point, I feel like... I hope by that point people sort of realise you can... You know, the film's kind of got a sense of humour. It's a bit playful, but... Yeah, lovely and excruciating watching people trying and failing to come across the way they think they should. And she doesn't realise that Carol just thinks she's an absolute nutter. But I like people misunderstanding each other and she thinks it goes great.
Mm-hmm. So St. Maud has one of the most powerful endings I've ever seen. I'm wondering, is it possible to talk a bit about how you came up with the ending without describing what happens? Or
yeah, it doesn't go well at the end. or maybe. She thinks, no, I knew I wanted to get to that point, and like the way that we do it in the film, I knew I wanted to get to that point for quite a long time. The mechanics of the story, and particularly the act leading up to it, that sort of final 30 minutes or so, that changed around a lot during script writing during the year or so before shooting. And that was sort of the bit I was most kind of stuck with and kind of banging my head against brick wall for ages. But I don't know, it felt, without trying to spoil it, it felt like to end it any other way by that point would feel like a bit of a cop out.
Good answer, yeah. Well, what are you working on now?
I am writing two scripts. I'm co-writing something with a friend, Veronica Tavilska, who I went to film school with. And I mean, I'm sort of at that point now where it's in theory this week or any day now, I'm sort of meant to finish it. And then I'm hoping we can start getting it into gear to actually, I don't know. I'd love to film it this year. And it's a romance, I guess. And the other one I want to write myself, but it's very early days and it's still a bit of a mess at the moment, so I haven't quite worked out yet. But yeah, looking forward to getting on with more.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to seeing both of those when they're ready, when they're done. Rose Glass, thank you very much.
Thanks so much. Really nice to talk to you.
Rose Glass is the writer and director of the psychological thriller Saint Maud. It's Rose's debut feature film. Find out more about Rose and Saint Maud at wpr.org/beta.
I kept that frame in the staircase where they're having the current day struggle, partly to give you something a little bit more suspenseful to keep returning you to a single night and a moment that's urgent.
Amy Gentry talks about her latest crime thriller, Bad Habits, a novel of suspense. That's coming up in just a moment. But since we're keeping you in suspense, it will probably seem a bit longer. Trust me, it will be worth the wait. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.